Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of PrepareForChange.net Radio. Today I have with me Dan Rogers. He's a medical doctor practicing in Tijuana. And he's going to tell us about his clinic, his therapies that he uses, the diseases that he treats, and anything else that is pertinent to that.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I'm glad to be a part of this program. I've been treating patients with alternative medicine for almost 40 years. We're going to talk a little bit about Gerson therapy and Gerson plus therapy and what people are now starting to call Rogers therapy, because it's well beyond the basic Gerson. But doing basic Gerson, I have more experience than anybody else in the world ever. I've been doing it almost 40 years. Max Gerson, who started Gerson therapy, practiced for about 25 or 30. So I've got a lot more experience than anybody else out there. I also am well involved in alternative medicine from other viewpoints. As an example, I was invited to go back to the National Institutes of Health and give a presentation back there, and I was the only one representing a foreign medical practice. My practice is exclusively out of the country. I practice in Playa de Tijuana, Mexico. And that's because we have the freedom down there to do things we can't do here. But I went back and gave a presentation on what I do, and then I was invited back 6 months later and sat on a number of different committees. And out of our work, the Office of Alternative and Complementary Medicine was formed under the director's office at the National Institutes of Health. So I've got a lot of experience doing this. I've treated thousands of patients. And one of the things that I always like to talk about is God, I think, is the one who started good health for us way back in the beginning when the earth was first created. And he tells us what the original plan was back in Eden. And the very first book in the Bible, Genesis chapter 1, verse 29, and basically what they ate was fruits and nuts. And then later on, after sin entered, he added vegetables and grains. So that's kind of the history of where things started. In modern times, the earliest author that I've been able to locate talking about the principles of good health and God's basic principles of how we can maintain a healthy body and a healthy life was Ellen White, and back in the late 1800s and early 1900s, she elucidated in her book, Ministry of Healing, the eight principles of health that came down to us all the way from the beginning of time on this planet. And they're sort of codified in the acronym WANT REST. The W stands for pure water, the A for fresh air, N for nutrition or diet, T for temperance or moderation, R of course for rest, C for exercise, S for sunshine, and T for trust in divine power. And modern scientists are now proving how right she was when she wrote this in 1905. And the book was published then. And I'm actually writing eight booklets and have lectures on every one of those, and have a number of other books that are out. But this is well before Max Gerson came along, and then Max Gerson started developing what is now Gerson therapy in the late 1920s, early 30s. Max Gerson published his book in 1958, unfortunately he passed away in 1959, and his book basically sat on the shelf for the next 20 years until myself and my medical team, together with the founders of the Gerson Institute, which was Charlotte Gerson Strauss, Dr. Gerson's daughter, and Norman Fritz. The experience Charlotte had with seeing patients with Gerson therapy was at her dad's side when she was a teenage girl. Of course, she's not a physician, and neither is Norm or anybody else associated with the Gerson Institute or the Gerson Research Organization. But they were very good marketing and at education, and Gar Hildenbrand, who started working at the Gerson Institute, he and his wife Christine were very good at research and writing, and that was kind of their passion. And back and forth between the two developing different points of view on Gerson therapy, and I finally suggested and came up with an idea, why don't we just separate and let Gar and Christine follow their passion, and let the Gerson Institute continue doing marketing and education. And everybody was kind of aghast at that first suggestion. We used to get together every week, and all of us as a team working together. And two or three weeks later, they all sit down at the conference table, and you know, they were coming around to it, so maybe that's not such a bad idea after all. So that's basically how the Gerson Research Organization got started. That's kind of my brainchild as well. Way back in the beginning, before Gar was ever associated, and Norm Fritz and Charlotte Gerson was introducing me to the Gerson therapy, and I have to thank them for that. We weren't allowed to accept any patients that had prior treatment with chemo, surgery, or radiation because of Max Gerson's experience with post-chemo patients. They did really well for about 6 months, and all of them spiraled downhill and died. So I'm glad that I was able to develop some protocols that everybody accepted, and basically they were my invention and my idea. The first basic changes to the cookie cutter plan of Max Gerson. And of course, I don't blame anybody else that aren't physicians, like out of the Gerson Institute or research organization, because they don't know how things work in the body and they don't understand the human body very well. They don't have medical training. And so they wanted to do cookie cutter plans of Max Gerson, and that was a good start. But we had to do something to help bring the therapy forward. And way back then, I was already beginning what I now call Gerson Plus Therapy or Rogers Therapy. And consequently, every practitioner of Gerson therapy anywhere in the world that's having any success at all is using those initial basic changes. We also had some other changes in Max Gerson's original therapy as he wrote in the book. In the late 70s, early 80s, the American dairy industry was coming down with Campylobacter infections. And since we were doing Max Gerson's raw liver juice, which uses raw liver mixed with carrot, some of my patients who were, of course, immunocompromised because they're cancer patients, were coming down with Campylobacter infections, so we had to stop using that. And so another change to the protocol as written and codified by Max Gerson in 1958. And we went back and looked at what Max did, because after the first 2 years of no liver juice, we studied our patient population and they weren't doing as well. The survival rates weren't as high. So we went back and saw what Max did, and he was originally, before he introduced the liver juice, he used things like brewer's yeast. So we immediately put that back into the program. We added liver capsules to help replace the phosphate base along with the brewer's yeast that was in the original liver juice. And we also added CoQ10, part of Krebs cycle, which produces cellular energy in the mitochondria. And that wasn't even available in Max Gerson's day, or I'm pretty sure he probably would have used it. So what I've done to develop further the Gerson plan, and I still do basic Gerson therapy. If anybody wants to do basic and that's all the money they have and all they can do, I'm more than happy to do that for them. But the survival rates for the PLUS program are so much higher that I try to encourage them to do the PLUS program if at all possible. But basically what the PLUS program is, following Max Gerson's pattern. He showed us how to do it. He had his basic plan, and he would add stuff to the program that worked well and was compatible. It worked for most patients, he kept it. If not, he got rid of it. Well, that's how I've developed what I now call Gerson Plus or Rogers Therapy. And that's taking programs out there, protocols that are well recognized around the world, and adding them in. If they work well, we keep them. If not, we get rid of them. And some of those really big advances that we had was things like Coley's mixed bacterial vaccine, or Coley's toxins. These are natural vaccines. They're not the ones that everybody's worried about giving their kids. They don't have the mercuries and all the other stuff in it. These are made from bacteria that's grown in a culture broth and killed. That's all that happens, and we make a vaccine out of it. Well, Dr. Coley, back at what is now Memorial Sloan Kettering, before it was just Sloan Kettering then, cured a lot of sarcoma patients with it, cancer patients. And so Max Gerson, in his book, actually writes, somebody needs to look at this. Well, nobody ever did till I came along. That's because it had been outlawed in the United States since the early 60s, when the FDA and everybody else figured that chemotherapy is going to cure everybody. and not going to have to worry about cancer anymore. We've got the cure. Well, that didn't work out too well, and I started looking at the Coleys, and I'm probably the father or one of the founders of the reemergence of Coley's therapy back in the modern times as well, along with Gerson therapy. And it's really a potent immune system booster. I don't just use it for sarcoma or just for cancer patients. I use it for many, if not most, of my patients that come down because their immune systems are depressed. And this is a very potent immune system elevator. It works extremely well. And another one that we have is Dr. Issel's famous autologous vaccine. He brought it over from Germany. Issel's met Gerson in 1952 in Baden-Baden, Germany, and he told me personally they were so excited to meet each other they stayed up all night and talked. And Issel's finally retired and moved to Florida. He gave me a call and said, "Would you like to work with me?" And I said, "Sure." I didn't know who he was. And he and his wife, Issa, came out and they stayed in our home in San Diego. And then I took them across every week down to the hospital we had in Tijuana. And they got their own place about a month later. And for the next several years, I had the privilege of working hand in hand with Dr. Issel's. And he told me, "Dr. Rogers, I finally realized my lifelong dream. I've always wanted to unite Issel's therapy and Gerson therapy. And with you, I've now been able to do that." And because of Dr. Issel's and me, of course, the autologous vaccine is now in many of the clinics and hospitals down in Tijuana. Another thing that we've added to it is PolyMVA, which has a wonderful track record all on its own. I was studying some articles and saw in Lancet, the British Medical Journal, an article published by Dr. Evangelino Danopoulos in Greece with his patients that he did, and he did a combination of IV urea and creatine. Orally, and they was having really good success with cancer patients. So I started trying it with some of my patients. We got some really good success. And I've used it in some very unique ways beyond what even Dr. Danopoulos published on. And we found that it works extremely well for many patients. We do high dose IV vitamin C, intravenous vitamin C. We do high dose intravenous Laetrile, high dose shark cartilage, high dose many other products that we put our patients on that work really well. Another one of the things we do is hydrogen peroxide treatments, ozone, and ultraviolet blood irradiation treatments. And of all of those three, I like the ultraviolet blood irradiation, the UBI, the best, because whenever you have any fluid that contains water, which blood is about 80% water, and you expose it to ultraviolet light, it produces hydrogen peroxide in that fluid. And that's where we get the hydrogen peroxide that you have in the store. It's basically water bubbled through a UV light and produces ozone and hydrogen peroxide in there, and it's stabilized, and that's where we get it. So it's a really marvelous modality as well. It's been shown in many, many studies to directly heal cancer cells, bacteria, fungus, viruses. So just another one of the many modalities that we've added to the Gerson Plus program. And we looked at most of the things out there I've tried. There's new stuff coming on the market, and I continue to try the new things and always try to be on the cutting edge of what's going on. Some of the things that we tried and decided not to use is things like Carnivora, 714X, SEAC T, Pau de Arco T, Jason Winters T, the Red Lapacho. Some of those things have helped people, and there's no doubt about it. But what I've tried to do is limit the protocols that we use to help the patients with all the costs to the ones that we found that works most consistently for most people. One of my cases that I show, and you can see it on the website, is a non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, huge tumor mass on the neck, another one under the arm. And he tried and failed to conventional medicine, tried and failed to carnivore, 714X, SEAC-T, and other things. And he was failing the basic Gerson therapy as well. And I told him, "John, I've just read about this stuff in Lancet. Are you willing to let me try it with you?" And he said, "Yeah, I'm dying anyway." So we did, and I used some really innovative techniques of applying it. to him that Dr. Denopoulos didn't even talk about. And within 2.5 months, the one on his neck was the size of a walnut. The one under his arm was almost gone. 2 months later, arm totally clear, neck totally clear, and he went home a happy guy and no more non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Are those pictures on your website?
They're on the website.
Because you showed them today and they were amazing.
Well, thank you. Yeah, the website, for those of you who are listening, and our toll-free number from the U.S. is 866-535-8886. That's 866-535-8886. The website is gersonplus.com. That's gersonplus.com. The email address, info, short for information, info@gersonplus.com. So that's a good way to get a hold of me. And if you look on the website, you can also find my other contact numbers for international and for faxes, international and stateside. And the Mexican number is there if you want to call me on the Mexican line as well. So we try to do our best to try to serve our patients and try to make them well. One of the things that really separates what I do from most of the other practitioners of alternative medicine, especially in the Tijuana area, is that most of them help the patients to live with their disease, but they don't really cure it. For us, if the program works, and it does for most people, we actually reverse the disease and the patients can live a healthy, robust life, just following some basic, reasonable way of living and not go off the deep end and do the things that cause the disease in the first place. Because you've got to change the paradigm of the way you live and your lifestyle and what you eat if you want to have a healthy life. In 1971, when the war on cancer started under President Nixon, the cancer rate or incidence in the United States was 1 in 8. That means 1 out of every 8 people would come down with cancer in their lifetime. The survival rate at that time was just a little under 30%, which in reality, the flip side of that is the death rate was a little over 70%. Of course, they don't talk about that. They talk about the survival rates. Well, as of about 3 years ago, the latest figures from the National Cancer Institute, which is one of the National Institutes of Health, and they were on all the morning talk shows, ABC, CBS, NBC, and they were bragging about improving the survival rates in cancer. So they went from about 28% to about 31 or 32%. Mm-hmm. This is 50 years almost later. How many billions of research dollars then? How many new improvements in chemotherapy, new improvements in surgical techniques like the gamma knife and radiosurgery? How many new improvements in the radiation therapies, even things like the proton accelerator that they're now bragging about in a lot of the big institutions? We really haven't affected the survival rates, only a couple or 3%. Still, roughly 70% of the people die. The highest authority of medicine in Australia published a study a couple of years ago, and they looked at chemotherapy as a standalone agent. That means they didn't use anything else, just to show you how poorly chemotherapy performs. And please don't use it unless you absolutely have to save your life long enough to get down and see me. But chemotherapy in the United States has about a 2.5% 5-year survival rate, very poor. In Australia, about 1.5%. So even they are questioning whether they should continue to use chemo as a treatment modality because of the high costs. Average cost for chemo annually is more than $100,000. Some of them over $500,000. And what are you getting for your money? Pain, misery, and poor quality of life. Studies have been published outside of the United States, because they don't publish them here, that people who refuse chemo and don't do it actually live longer and have a much better quality of life than those who take the chemo. Mm-hmm. So it's by far the worst choice you can do, I think, as far as doing therapies. For my first choice of the big three would be surgery, because the surgical insult actually does a mild boost to the immune system while it's trying to heal from the surgery. And for patients like melanoma, they do well post-surgically if they do something else. If they don't do something else, the melanoma is almost guaranteed to come back. but as long as they come down and see me or do something else, it's going to improve the way they live. Also, breast cancer, one of my first recommendations, and breast cancer is the number one killer for women in the U.S. today. Prostate cancer for men, but for breast cancer, if possible, to have a small lump or whatever, I always tell my patients, instead of going and getting a biopsy where you're probably going to spread it, just go get the lump removed. The American Medical Association published a study in 1995 that showed that there's virtually no difference in five-year survival rates between simple lumpectomy, simple mastectomy, and radical mastectomy. So why do you think most of the surgeries today are radical mastectomies? A lot bigger surgery, a lot more money.
Yeah.
And I would be willing to accept that if there was a good chance of the patient surviving. But breast cancer is the number one killer. Survival rates are miserable, even when they do that. And if the if by chance, let me wait just a second, the helicopter goes over. Okay, are we ready? And if by chance the patient survives the surgery, the vast majority of them are left disfigured and with problems. They'll have lymphedema in the arms, they'll have to wear a stockinette, they'll have pain, they have reduced range of motion, they have all sorts of problems for the rest of their life. And when you juxtaposition that with the very poor survival rates overall, to me it's not worth it. You're way better off to try something else, and there are lots of other better alternatives out there. So back to the survival rates and what's going on. The incidence of cancer in 71 was 1 in 8. Today, as published just a couple of years ago, for you women, it's 1 in 3. Mm-hmm. For us men, the incidence rate is 1 in 2, almost about half of us. And something's wrong when we go from 1 in 8 to 1 in 3 or 1 in 2. Something's not working in spite of all the billions of dollars spent. Something's not working in the system. Why do chemo, surgery, and radiation fail? That's really the big question for the most part. And my worldview, here's the reason. If we do nothing to change the reason why the cancer or the disease, it doesn't just have to be cancer, started in the first place, we do nothing to change the culture medium, if you will, that the disease tissue grows in, change the internal biochemistry of the body, make a switch in what's going on. If you don't change what caused the disease, how are you going to get well? How are you going to not have it come back? It's almost impossible. It only makes logical sense to me that something has to change in order to get well and stay well. And that's what I'm an expert at. I've been doing this for almost 40 years, and I change the internal biochemistry of the patient, and that's how we make them well. So, down to brass tacks, how does this program work? Why does it work so well? Provide the nutrient base that we need. I'll supply all the minerals, the micro and macronutrients, enzymes, all that stuff, so the body has a building blocks that needs to rebuild healthy tissue. Detox and cleanse. Boost the metabolism, boost the immune system so that it can have a chance by igniting the best smart bomb your body has in the entire world, your own immune system, and make it functional again. And then balancing out all the systems of the body, the hormones, the acid base, the minerals, the enzymes, you name it. Give this program about 6 months run, and it still continues to amaze me after doing this for almost 40 years. See my patients come with such poor lab results with liver and enzymes and other cancer markers that are up in the thousands when they should be 35 or 40. And within about 6 months, most of them are either in normal limits or normal range or very, very close to it. And it's just the body doing its thing. God, I believe, made our bodies be self-healing if we'll just give them a chance. You can't build a building out of poor building materials and expect it to last 100 years or longer. And that's what we've got to do for our body, supply the best building materials that are out there. So my wish for you guys, every one of you, is to live a long, and healthy life, and it can be done, and you can do it. And if you want to know how, give me a call, drop me an email.
Doctor, I'd like to ask you, I know you treat more than just cancer, and I was wondering if there's an average stay at your clinic for cancer versus other diseases.
Typically, we want the patients with the more serious conditions to stay for at least 3 weeks. Most psychologists and psychiatrists will tell you it takes about 21 days to change your habit patterns, and that's what we want to do, is teach you new habit patterns. When I first started this program almost 40 years ago, we wouldn't accept a patient unless they stayed for 8 weeks. But as costs have gone up and gone up and gone up, we've tried to reduce and reduce and reduce. We're down to just about the bare minimum to do information transfer that they need in order to carry on the program at home and stuff. It takes about 3 weeks to get a minimum basic absorption level of all that needs to be done. It looks pretty simple on the surface, and it really isn't. If any of you are contemplating doing this at home on your own, there are a few people that have been successful. I don't recommend it because your chances of failure are very high. And if you find one of the three-day wonders or some of these other people that have minimal training out there, I wouldn't recommend you see them either. In my opinion, doing this again for almost 40 years, I think it needs to be like any other residency program where you go and train with somebody that really knows what they're doing, follow at least one or two patients from beginning to end, which usually takes 1 or 2 years, and do a real full-blown training program so that you know what you're doing when you go out and start treating patients. And so we recommend, like I said, a minimum of 3 weeks. We do have health vacations as well. I mean, people take vacations to Europe all the time and they'll spend $10,000, $15,000, $20,000. Why not take a health vacation? Costs a lot less than that. You don't have to be sick to come. And we have programs that run from 4 days all the way up to as many weeks as you want. And of course, the price is substantially reduced because we don't have to do the full-blown program and have all the very potent protocols to try to heal from devastating diseases. Almost anything you can think of out there that is a chronic condition, whether that be lupus, scleroderma, diabetes, Alzheimer's, Graves' disease, ALS, multiple sclerosis, we do very, very well with. Just keep naming them. I can't think of any conditions that we've ever had that we haven't been able to help. Even paranoid schizophrenics, I've been able to get them off their meds, get them back in productive society, back to work. So the program works marvelously well. Another little sidelight, I can't remember any patient I've had that has been on a liver or a kidney transplant list. We have not been able to get off of that kidney or liver transplant list. My latest kidney one was here at UCLA. He was on the transplant list. Took him about 6 months. He was off the list. My latest liver transplant case was less than a year ago. A young lady that had more than 50% necrotic liver on double needle biopsy at UCSD, University of California, San Diego. And she opted to come with me and start doing my program. And within 2 months, she was off the transplant list. I talked to the head of the transplant team, and they told me, in all my years of doing this, I have never seen a response like this ever. How do you explain it? And I said, God, miracles, and proper therapy, proper treatment. And never wanted to know what the proper treatment was, so I never told her.
Well, your treatment sounds pretty comprehensive.
It is.
Do the patients, it sounds like you actually train them
every
in
day
how to eat.
Every
and,
day.
And what to do.
Yeah, we have cooking classes down there. My lovely wife, Sally, of 50 years today is our wedding anniversary, and she trains the patients on juicing and cooking for the program, and I do all the other training on the medical aspects.
Wow. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
Wow. So do patients go home on things like poly-MVA?
They do. And on all the other programs, we have take-home protocols for the high-potency programs that they do at home and continue on. For example, the autologous vaccine, there's 13 of them. You give a maximum of one a week. So it's about a 3 to 4 month program. So we teach them how to do that, and how to give their own injections and how to go home. Same thing with the Coley, that's roughly a 6 month program. We teach them how to do that. And so there's a lot of of information transfer that has to take place for the patient to be able to go home and properly do the therapy. But if you follow the program as we outline it, like a Bible, the chances of you getting well are very high. From the studies we've done, and I've published in U.S. scientific peer-reviewed literature, most of the doctors that you meet have never published anything. And we published on melanoma and found that stage one and stage two, and this is the only program in the world that has 100% five-year survivals for any stage of any cancer, for both stage one and two, fully the first half. We have 100% five-year survivals for melanoma. Drop clear down to end stage, conventional medicine has about a 5 to 6% five-year survival rate with just the basic Gerson, 39. With Gerson Plus, with only one modality added, 57. And we have more than 20 modalities now, and I know it's higher, and I just haven't had any money to go do the studies. So looking at that, we're about 10 times or 1,000% higher than conventional medicine for melanomas. We looked at ovarian cancer, same thing. Stage 3 in the 80s, stage 4, 63% compared to about 6% or 7% for conventional medicine. So pretty much across the board, for a given cancer at a given stage, we have about 10 times higher survival rates with the PLUS program, or 1,000%. And the PLUS program, of course, has much higher survival rates than even the basic Gerson. I would recommend the PLUS, and you can also do the basic Gerson if that's what you would like to do. Any other questions?
Sounds pretty comprehensive.
It is.
Well, is there anything else that you would like people to know about you, your clinic, about health? What is your best recommendations for our listening audience?
What I do with all of my patients, I put them on a three-month vegan diet. And there's just so many studies from all over the world, including those in the China study, including Loma Linda University School of Public Health. They did a 25-year study, and my parents actually participated in the first one. And now they're on their second 25-year study that just started about 5 years ago. And wherever you look, without question, a vegan diet is the healthiest diet out there. Vegetarian is next, and of course, the standard American diet, the SAD diet, SAD, standard American diet, probably one of the worst diets out there. Why do we have so much disease? Well, look at what happened back in 71. People weren't living with the fast foods. Now, many times I'll have bacon and eggs for breakfast, fast food for lunch, steak or roast and potatoes for supper, and they don't get their veggies, they don't get their fruits, they get way too many animal products, and people say, well, where am I going to get my protein? The proteins that you find in plant-based sources are much more bioavailable than they are from animal-based sources. Why? Because that's the way God made us. We were supposed to get them from the grains and the stuff that the cattle and everybody else is eating. So when we get it secondhand from the animal, the entire family of molecules and enzymes and minerals that are there in the plant-based program are not available in the animal-based program, so it's much more difficult for the body to decode and use it and get rid of the toxic stuff. If you have the plant-based sources, then the bioavailability is there. You need much less protein than people think. If you look at people groups from around the world, most of them use plant-based proteins and very little animal-based proteins. And they don't have the heart disease, diabetes, cancer, obesity we have in first world countries. In first world countries we have it because, I believe, of the animal-based protein diet that we have. And we only need about 7 to maybe 10% protein in the diet, especially if it comes from plant-based sources, because it's much more easily used by the body and assimilated. Everything that you eat practically in the plant-based world has protein in it. Even orange juice has a good amount of protein, and potatoes and dark leafy greens and tomatoes and just about you name it. Grains too, and one of my favorite personal grains is quinoa, and it's about 23 to 25% protein. excellent source of protein. And there's just so many different ways. Legumes. There's enough protein available, you don't really have to go to an animal source to get it.
Great.
So, best recommendation, a vegan diet. If you can't do that, then at least a vegetarian diet. And if you're going to do the other stuff, do it in moderation. Remember back to our 8 laws of health. One of the things is temperance or moderation. Do it in moderation. And yeah, if you're pretty healthy and you're living a pretty good lifestyle most of the time and have a pretty decent diet, you can even have ice cream once in a while, or you can have some steak if you want it. But try to do it with you know, occasionally, not as a daily occurrence. And if you do stuff like that, you should be able to live a healthy, full, robust, enjoyable life.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Dr. Rogers,
My pleasure.
For being here with us today and for giving us such great information.
My pleasure. If any of you out there have health problems or know somebody that does, and I'm sure that applies to every single one of you, please give me a call, email me, look at our website, ask for an information packet. It's all for free, and we'll try to help you out any way we can. God bless everybody. Thank you, guys. God bless you guys as well. And as one of my favorite TV characters says, live long and prosper.
Yay. Very good. Thank you so much.
Take care.
We will now speak with the president of the Cancer Control Society, Frank Cousineau, here at the 43rd Annual Cancer Control Society Convention. You are listening to PrepareForChange.net Radio. Our goal is to bring you innovative approaches to restoring health and enhancing wellness. Our shows range from health to meditation to financial and everywhere in between. If you find our shows helpful, please go to prepareforchange.net and use the donate button in the right-hand column. A special guest for this show is the president of the Cancer Control Society, Frank Cousineau. Frank has been with the Cancer Control Society since 1973. Today we are attending the 43rd Annual Cancer Control Society Convention, which has as its main goal education on different kinds of diseases and solutions that are non-toxic. Speakers from around the world are invited to give presentations on various therapies, which they have found successful in treating not only cancers, but various other diseases that plague mankind. It is with great pleasure that I welcome Frank Cousineau. Can you give us a little history on how you became interested in the Cancer Control Society, Frank?
Thank you very much. Thank you for being here. Thank you for doing this. The Cancer Control Society is a nonprofit charitable educational organization for the legal minds out there and the accountants. It's a 501c3, which means donations are tax deductible. But the mission of the Cancer Control Society is to provide education and information on alternative therapies for cancer and other diseases. And when I say alternative therapies, non-toxic, most of them natural-based, and cancer is the primary focus of the organization. But what we found over the years, of course, what helps cancer is going to help all the other diseases. And particularly since we're looking at degenerative diseases, immune-compromised people, so there's certain common elements both in the diseases and then what's the effective remedies. And I like to summarize the mission of the Cancer Control Society by telling people that our organization provides real solutions for real patients right now. A lot of the other organizations, the big ones, always talking about research. The truth be known, those things are 5, 10, 15, 20 years into the future or never. Some of those things we'll never see. And these are organizations that have been telling us we're on the edge of a cure for how many years? Probably my entire adult life. I got involved originally the Cancer Control Society after my mother died of cancer in 1973. She'd had several bouts of cancer before. 73 was kind of the culmination of that. And by then it was very far advanced. The doctors in Modesto, you know, where we live, told me that she had anywhere from 30 to 60 days, maybe 30, but not over 60 days to live. And he still recommended chemotherapy. Yeah. And so, you know, again, at that point, not fully comprehending everything that was going on, and still with a modicum of confidence in the medical community, she agreed, and we agreed, and so she had one of the very most common chemotherapeutic agents was given to her, and she was so sick for a week, she couldn't eat, she couldn't drink anything, she couldn't even drink water without vomiting, and she was in tremendous pain, and she told me, she said, don't let them do that again. So that started us on a quest, looking for solutions. Was very fortunate that through some relatives of ours and then some friends on my mother's side, we met Dr. E.T. Krebs Jr. And Dr. Krebs was the co-discoverer of vitamin B17, also known as Laetrile, amygdalin. And spent a couple of hours on the telephone with him and talking about cancer, talking about disease, and he said, take your mother to Dr. Contreras. And at that time, Dr. Contreras was the primary physician using non-toxic cancer remedies in Tijuana. So I did. I took her in July, then I took her back end of August, September. And what I noticed particularly is that it certainly improved the quality of her life. It helped to at least manage the pain, and instead of 30 to 60 days, my mother lived almost 6 months. So that was a tremendous benefit in and of itself. I don't think it's losing a family member is certainly is tragic and it's traumatic, but at least we had some extra time to say goodbye. Well, in the course of this, I met Dr. Contreras' secretary, and a year after my mother died, we were married, and I took her back to Modesto. So through, obviously, people that she knew on the clinic side, and then some people that I knew from other avenues, started learning more and more about alternative cancer therapies, Ed Griffin's book, World Without Cancer, and those things. And so I started attending the Cancer Control Society convention, I want to say somewhere around 76, in that 77. First as an observer, and then I was working very closely with Ed Griffin, so I was there as an exhibitor. And little by little, I would just kind of volunteer for things or do things. Oh, something needed to be done, turn on the lights, turn off the lights. And I just got drawn into the organization. Mm-hmm. And so Betty Lee Morales, Lorraine Rosenthal, then would say, well, Frank, would you do this? Would you do that? And that led to my being asked to join the board of governors of the Cancer Control Society, and then when Betty Lee passed on, I forget the year. Then of course Norman Fritz became the president. Then they asked me to be the vice president. And then about 10 years ago or so, I think he died, and then I became president. And so I've been there ever since. I've actually been involved in the conventions, close to 40 years. Before we left the Ambassador, which is about 25 years ago, Norman Fritz and I would share the master ceremonies duties, so that give him a rest, give me a rest, and also give me a chance to go out and interact with the people and the,
right.
and the exhibitors. So, and then, as I say, I think it was about 10 years ago, he died, so I just became president and working very closely with Lorraine Rosenthal, who's really the, she's really the guiding light. I mean, it's her efforts on a day-to-day basis. She really pulls this convention together and has, you know, again, this is number 43.
Yes.
And so my goal is to improve and expand on the communication side of it. We need to reach more people. I know just from my my private life away from this that more people are getting cancer because they call me on the telephone, I get emails every day. And these are people looking for something other than radiation, chemotherapy, and surgery. One of the truly remarkable things for me is that when I first started in this, both people going to the clinics, people coming to the convention, were, again, terminal cancer patients, stage four, that had already had surgery, radiation, chemotherapy. Today, we see probably somewhere between 30 and 40% are newly diagnosed patients. Some of them are stage four, some of them are in very serious condition, but they have had no prior treatment because they just recently discovered the disease, which gives us an opportunity to help them to intervene so that they at least improve the outcome. Now, some people still choose to do chemotherapy and maybe radiation. Many people still decide to have surgery, but by integrating the non-toxic, the natural protocols, it can tremendously improve the outcome and certainly extend the life.
Right.
Because we know that in spite of what we're told by the establishment, we know that the conventional approach doesn't...
The numbers aren't good.
No, the numbers aren't good. The establishment brags about the numbers, but they always couch the numbers in such a way that people don't realize how bad they are.
Yeah. Well, I think what you're doing is you're giving people more choices.
Choices, and the other thing we give them is hope.
Mm-hmm.
I know we're always accused of giving false hope, and what my counter to that is the establishment gives them despair. And Dr. John Connell, one of the founders of the Vitamin D Council, has spoken here a couple of times. From our platform said no doctor has the right to destroy hope.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't tell people we can guarantee anything, but we do tell them as long as you're breathing, there's hope for improvement.
That's right.
And there are, today there are so many protocols that are available. A number of them you have to go to Mexico to get them or possibly Germany. Some of them are available here in the United States. But at the very least, people can choose. If they want some orthodox, conventional therapy, that's fine. That's their choice. But we want them to understand that they do have the choice. Relatively recent in our field is something called insulin potentiation therapy, where physicians will use what we call fractionated chemotherapy. They use a 10% of whatever the dose would be. They potentiate it with insulin so that 90% of the chemotherapy goes into the cancer cell, and what little remains normally does not cause any damage. But on top of that, there's so many more. Hyperthermia. We now have dendritic cell vaccines, autologous dendritic cell vaccines. Dr. Joseph Issels in Germany practiced that for almost 50 years, very successfully. It's been in Tijuana probably 25 years. Now most of the clinics offer autologous. That means Vaccines come from the patient's own blood. They take a small sample, they culture for whatever they want, and then they inject it back into the patient over the course, usually of 6 months to a year.
So it's patient-specific
vaccine. It's patient-specific, exactly. Yes. And I think, again, kind of an interesting anecdote here. The United States, we're studying those, and you'll see something in the newspaper, breakthrough, almost imminent. Two or three years ago, the FDA did approve the first autologous vaccine for prostate cancer, Provenge. Interesting product, you know, seen their promotional materials are excellent. But it's the same thing that the Tijuana clinics have been doing 10, 20 years for all patients, mm-hmm. even women.
Wow.
And I think that's indicative of certainly something that's not quite right in the cancer establishment in the United States. Why wouldn't they be looking for this autologous vaccine for breast cancer or uterine cancer? Ovarian cancer, something that affects women. Mm-hmm. Why couldn't they do both at the same time? Dr. Issels in Germany for 50 years did for all his patients.
Not male just and female.
Male and female. So I think that's one area where the alternative and integrative cancer movement looks at all the patients. Mm-hmm. We look at the old ones and we look at the young ones, and there are more and more young ones. Limiting factor for the young ones in the United States, of course, is that we're not really in control. As parents, we don't have full control and say on our children. The government steps in with child protective services or whatever they call it in other states. But if you have a child diagnosed with cancer, you're forced to do radiation surgery, chemotherapy. And if you choose not to do that, the CPS, Child Protective Services, will come in, kidnap your child, and force these highly toxic, highly dangerous, relatively ineffective remedies on your child. If you're fortunate enough to get out of the country, then you're classified as a fugitive. Mm. And then if anything happens to your child, of course, then you're going to be charged with something else. If you can stay away long enough for your child to become cancer-free, and that's quite possible, then outcome pretty good for patient and family.
It's so sad people have to go through so much when they're already dealing with a critical situation
and
with a family member.
And particularly cancer. Because it does strike fear, mm-hmm. and many people despair, and we try to balance the fear with hope that they can choose to do things to make the however much time, and we don't know, I don't know, mm-hmm. but whatever time is left, let's see how comfortable we can make it. Now, in many cases, that time left may be 5 years, 10, 20. Dr. Alvarez, Gilberto Alvarez from Stella Maris Clinic over the weekend talked about a brain cancer patient that came to him 30-some years ago as a four-year-old. And after surgery, after radiation, after everything had failed. And so the parents were able to get him down to Tijuana. Dr. Alvarez worked very hard. Little Jeremy Snyder became well, and he was cancer-free for probably over 30 years. And we don't know quite what happened, but there was a recurrence, and they weren't able to control it. But Dr. Alvarez was able to go to Jeremy's wedding. Met the family, and there are a lot of cases like that where the patients are still alive. Rick Hill, another patient that went to Dr. Contreras in about 1974, 75, And he had an embryonal cancer, and I similar to testicular cancer. And some of the finest places, Mayo and some of the others, had carved on him, had worked on him, all to no avail, and he was virtually dead. He went to see Dr. Contreras, and this is 40-some years later. He's still alive and well and cancer-free.
Wow.
So we have, you know, we have a number of cases like that.
Well, I was quite impressed on Saturday when I don't know how many people got up, 20-some, and only had 2 minutes to tell their story, but it was compelling, you know?
Yes.
And they were all different types of therapies that they had done.
And they went to different places.
Yes.
And the interesting thing is some of them are 1 or 2 year survivors, some of them are 10, 12. I think one was 25. And one of the fellows from there told his story. He's been coming, telling his story for over 6 years. I think he was diagnosed 12 years ago, somewhere between 10 and 12 years ago. And the first few years, up till through last year, he said, you know, they tell me I still have a little bit of cancer in there, but it's getting smaller. He had a prostate cancer.
Mm.
His numbers, all his numbers were going down into close to normal ranges, and he was able to announce this year that his conventional allopathic doctors this year, just a few weeks ago, told him he was cancer-free.
Wow.
So some of us believe that it's much better to live with cancer slowly going away, living a normal life, than it is to die cancer-free miserably in 3 to 6 months.
Yeah.
Cancer doesn't spring up overnight. It takes years to develop. Sometimes it takes years for it to go away.
And with the speakers today, they even talked about new tests that can detect these things earlier.
Yes. Yeah. Truly, truly early detection. Because in what I tell people, in allopathic oncology, conventional oncology, they consider early detection anything prior to postmortem. So if they catch it before the patient dies, if they can diagnose it before the patient dies, that's early.
Mm-hmm.
But mammogram, by the time they find a mammogram on there, it is not early.
Right.
And if they do actually find one somewhat early, it's by mistake. It's not deliberate. And where, for instance, the cancer profile, Dr. Shandell, been coming to our convention for many years, developed the cancer profile. He can see, I think he was telling us the other day, he can see 200 cancer cells in in his test. And because he's not looking for a tumor, he's looking for the degradation products, in other words, the products that tumors produce,
mm-hmm.
that can be detected early.
Truly early.
They can be quantified 5 to 10 years before it would show up on a CT scan, a PET scan, a mammogram.
Mm.
And so those are things that really make it exciting for us.
Well, this has been a really informative weekend, and I would like to see it grow.
Well, we would too, and with efforts like yours, we will reach more people. We have people I'm meeting with to do just that. We have to develop new marketing methods, just as we have even new protocols, advanced protocols. We have to adapt newer modern marketing methods because the demographics have changed, people have changed, the way they communicate has changed, and we have to change. We have to change with that. And what you're doing here, that's a big part of our efforts to help get the word out.
Yes. I also want to mention your bus trips that you do.
Okay.
Can you tell us a little about that?
For sure. the Tijuana Clinics tours organized by the Cancer Control Society started in 1984. And so we've been going strong every year with that since 1984. We schedule about six a year we schedule. And we start here at the Sheraton Universal Hotel around 7:30 in the morning. We have a couple of intermediate pickup points on I-5 between here and San Diego, and we get to the border. We cross the border, and then we visit five different clinics in one day. So we get to see the clinic. We meet usually the medical director, sometimes some of the other staff, a few patients. Then we move on to the next one. We have snacks on the bus. The clinics provide snacks, and then one of the clinics always provides lunch for the group. So I like to tell people, you know, we eat our way through Tijuana.
They get to meet the staff and the doctors,
yes.
And they get to ask questions about the facility and the treatments.
And they see that Tijuana really is a safe place to visit. That's the other thing. We hear a lot of information in the media here in the U.S. is simply not true. Even at the height of the so-called cartel wars in Tijuana, it was nothing like how it was described. And I think that Tijuana, certainly in my opinion, my experience, is safer than any major city in the United States. Tijuana has about 1.5 million people, and I would say you get any city in the U.S. with about 1 million people, and you're going to find more crime, more violent crime, than you will find in all of Tijuana. So, and that's part of the purpose. Introduce them to Tijuana. Here's where the clinics are. Look at, you see, it's safe. And for me, when I'm down there, particularly on a school day, and school gets out, some parents go pick up their children, but when I see, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14-year-old students walking home from school, I see that as an indication that at the very least is a safe neighborhood. Because just the same as here, if it were a dangerous neighborhood, no parent would allow his or her child to walk home through a dangerous area.
Right, right.
So that's what we try to do. We try to show them what the options are, introduce them to them, because there's no single option that works for everybody. Just no therapy, no clinic, no doctor. And in the evaluations after our tour, very often we'll see there's somebody on there that likes this one, someone else likes the second one, someone else likes the third one. And we ask the questions, which ones, what did you like the most, which the least, and why.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fascinating because each clinic, out of a group of, you know, 40 or 50 people, each clinic will be, okay, I like that one the least. Each one, some will say, I like that one the best. And all different reasons. It was too big, it was too small, I liked the doctor, I didn't think it was big enough. So all these things, but it's, and that's, in deciding to select or choose a therapy, a lot of it's intuitive.
Yes.
It's how do you feel? My opinion, they're all good. They're all doing things that are valid, legitimate medical procedures. So it's you find the one that you like the therapist, you like the clinic facility, and you like the protocols. And again, the other thing, occasionally a patient will say, you know what, I was there 3 or 4 days or a week, and that was my first choice, but it just didn't seem to work. You know, tell people, then just go talk to the people there and tell them, thank you for everything you've done, but it's not working for me. I either want to go home or I'd like to go somewhere else.
Mm.
And if you've prepaid anything in the past, they've refunded whatever they haven't done, they've certainly returned the money. And I know there's been cases where one clinic would take the patient to where they want to go, to the next one. So you find, even though each one has his own own protocol and way of doing things, there's a compassion and a feeling for the patient there that we don't always see in the United States.
Yeah. Well, I think that's such a great service, you know, to actually take people down there. I mean, they don't have to do anything. They don't even have to drive.
No, just,
you know,
sit back
and
relax.
All I have to do is sit in a bus and relax and enjoy the ride. You know, that's so stress-free. And then to get, like you said, it's really important when you're choosing something that is important as your life,
yes,
that you have a good feeling about the place where you're going, about the people you're going to be with. You know, that's part of the healing process.
Very definitely. Yeah.
So I thank you for
taking that
kind of a initiative and doing these bus trips, because they're important.
Well, thank you so much for coming here, participating in the convention, and for helping us get the word out.
Well, that's just what we're going to do.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
I encourage you to visit www.cancercontrolsociety.com. There you will find pictures and bios for all the speakers at past conventions, helpful films to watch, and in the bookstore, you can also purchase any of the DVDs and audio recordings of past presentations, as well as books of interest. A good way to support the wonderful work of this benevolent group of dedicated people is to make a contribution to keep the yearly conventions funded, and also by attending yourself. If we all paid more attention to our health, then there would be less illness and more prevention. Thank you for being with us for this hour. Please join us each Sunday night on BBS Radio Station 1 at 9 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Shows can also be heard in the Archives section of the Media tab. Please remember that PFC is a volunteer group and we survive by donations only. So look deep within, and if you feel guided, we encourage you to go to prepareforchange.net website and donate an amount you can afford. That way you can assist us to continue the work at prepareforchange.net global movement. We thank you for your generosity and your much-needed show of love and kindness. Remember, we are all voices of the world.
Feel the same pride when they look into their eyes.
Yet some families go hungry, struggling just to live. There's enough for everyone if we just knew how to give.
Now is the time for a new era to start. We can join together through the beauty of a heart. I hear the voices of the world singing songs of peace and light. I see the vision of harmony appearing within our sight. From every culture, every faith, a flower blooms to right each wrong. We are the voices of the world. Add your voice and sing along. All people are part of the dream. With love to show the way, the violence will cease. All people are part of the team to extend harmony. So the world will live in peace. I hear the voices of the world from every village, every land. A ray of hope within each smile. A new friend to join my hand. The human spirit lifts us high to fill our hearts again with song. We are the voices of the world.